Welcome to Co-op Radio 102.7 FM, CFRO. This is Wake Up with Co-op. My name is Reg Argue. As our guest today, we have John Toppenberg from the Alaskan Wildlife Alliance. We also have Brad McCall in here as a special co-host today, guest co-host. Are you there, John? Okay, John's not there yet. Are you there, John?
I am here, yes.
Okay, we were just having a couple moments of technical problems there. Could you tell us a little bit about your organization?
Yeah, Alaska Wildlife Alliance will be 30 next year, so we've been around a while. Basically, we're an advocacy organization for Alaska's wildlife. We advocate for wildlife and wild places that specifically support wildlife, which, of course, is, you know, all wild places. But if we support an ecosystem in the general sense, we have to tie it to its specific need for Alaska's wildlife, and in all cases, it must be threatened or imperiled, or there must be some threat to that wildlife, and there's lots of threats up here to our natural wildlife.
Well, you have on your website an article which is called "The Problem Isn't the Bears." Could you elaborate a little bit about this article?
You've lost me on that one. The problem isn't the bears. Give me a clue what that's about. I don't run our website, so.
Okay. Actually, let's go over to the. There's a hunt going on in Alaska where the Alaskan government's calling for 900 to 1,400 dead Alaskan black bears.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that one?
Yes, indeed, I can. That's a area of Alaska that's really not that far from Anchorage, the biggest city up here, the only city really in Alaska. And the basis for that hunt is a assumption that there are not enough moose there based on anecdotal evidence. And what they have done is to take census population numbers of black bears from two separate areas, not this area of Alaska, but from two separate areas, come up with a theory on how many bears in that area, and then decide, well, let's kill as many as we can. And they've authorized killing sows, sows with cubs, cubs alone, any means possible, trapping, hunting, from the air, land and shoot, that sort of thing. It is a comprehensive sort of a program to try and eliminate a number of black bears, and they don't even know if there are that many black bears there. So it's a very unscientific, unfounded solution, in quotes, to what is probably a non-existent problem. Vic Van Vollenberg, a doctor, PhD, wildlife biologist with 32 years in experience up here in moose-wolf relationships, is very familiar with that specific area. And he says the reason there are not a lot of moose here is because it's extremely poor moose habitat. So it just gives you an idea as to how skewered and screwed up our wildlife management system up here is.
Well, in the McNeil River area has, for years, been a place where people from all over the world have gone to photograph the bears, which has made the bears very docile and used to human contact. Now, I remember that there were reports saying that they were going to open that area for hunting, and thanks to organizations like yourself and others, you're able to stop it. However, we were talking on the phone, and you mentioned that areas surrounding the McNeil River area are open for hunting?
There is a area. It is adjacent to the McNeil River Bear Sanctuary. Luckily, we were able to stop the hunt in an immediate adjacent area, but there is another adjacent area just very slightly removed from the area where we were able to stop the hunt, wherein a hunt is allowed, and that hunt has resulted in an ever-increasing number of bears being killed, and it has certainly gone way over the carrying capacity for that area. And also, the bears from the sanctuary frequent that area. So what the hunters are doing are killing human-tolerant bears. These are totally habituated bears. They just walk up and shoot them like you would a cow or that sort of thing. It certainly doesn't have anything to do with fair chase or ethics that, you know, good, solidly grounded hunters certainly utilize ethics in their hunting, and this would not be conducive to that at all.
Yeah, there was an article on your website which talked about the manufactured Alaskan hunts lack thrill, should be killed, can pass, points of view from the community, and it came from the Channel 2, KTUU. Could you talk a little bit about that one?
Yes. I think that's the spot. I've done a number of spots on that channel, and they've, you know, featured some of our issues for quite a while now. I think that may be a reference to a hunt wherein a photographer named Daniel Zatz was able to photograph a bow hunter shooting a bear at close range with his arrow, which of course did not result in a kill, and then his guide shooting the bear with a rifle. And that footage made it to Channel 2 and led to a bit of a controversy. The hunters being aware that a photographer was in the area came over to the camp where the photographer was staying and threatened them, wanted them to leave and so on, which, you know, they had every right to be there. It's a national preserve, the Katmai National Preserve. And they refused to leave. Channel 2 reporter was with them, and they ended up photographing the footage, high-definition footage, that I just referred to, and created quite a controversy up here because it made it so clear that this is not an ethical hunt. It has nothing to do with fair chase.
Yeah, that's that sounds just horrific even to think of that. When I was reading the article, I couldn't believe, because as you were saying, there was a quote, if I might may, from the article. It said, hunt, not because the hunt was illegal, but the kill was so ridiculously easy, they were humiliating. And it goes on to say, now these hunters will have a hard time impressing friends back home with tales about their noble pursuit of dangerous Alaskan brown bears. And I'm someone, when I grew up on the northern tip of Vancouver Island, we had a lot of black bears there. And I can remember one time when I went to go get some firewood with my father, that we crossed over this bridge, and I looked down and I saw this carcass of a black bear. And all his skin had been cut off, and his hands and his legs, and just the body itself, they were dumped in the creek. Do you have an awful lot of instances of poaching similar to that in Alaska, where people just come there just to get the bear skin for a rug?
Well, it's certainly true that we have incidents of poaching, and way too many. Much of Alaska is so remote, it's hard to find many of those. But we did have a situation 3 years ago, it may have been 4 years ago now, wherein seven brown bears were killed in an area of the Katmai coast. And it was investigated, they figured out who did it, and we had a terrible time. It took 2.5 years of my organization and others, primarily my organization, bringing pressure on federal authorities. This was on federal parkland, to prosecute these people. There was a reluctance to prosecute. They finally did and convicted two people of killing several bears. So it is a problem up here, and it's not always adequately prosecuted.
And what kind of fine did these two individuals face when they were finally convicted of their crimes?
As I recall, there was no fine or extremely small fine. They had their hunting privileges, I believe, revoked for a year, as I recall. And they had to do a number of hours of community service. It was certainly not adequate to the crime.
So how would the listening audience, how can we help you out, lend a helping hand with our brothers and sisters to the north in Alaska from Canada? How can we help you guys out to pressure the federal U.S. government to start passing protection when it comes to the wildlife?
Well, actually, in terms of management of our wildlife, it is done by a board of game, and they even, in many cases, set the policies on federal land. So what we have to do is understand In Alaska, there's a board of game. It's appointed by the governor, approved by the legislature, and they're the one that sets the policies for the taking and management of our wildlife. So we need to put pressure. Right now, I believe the best pressure can be put on our governor. Her name is Sarah Palin, and she resides in our state capital, which is Juneau. But you could certainly go to our website and donate to our organization. We are, I believe, the most effective Alaska voice opposing this mismanagement of our wildlife. And that website would be akwildlife.org, www.akwildlife.org. And if you would contact us, let me give you a phone number also for those people that may not have computer connections. They can call me directly at my desk. That's area 907-277-9819. And we'll certainly try to plug whomever into what's most effective at the moment in terms of combating this mismanagement.
And what's happening in reference to the Pebble Mine? It's supposed to be one of the largest open-pit mines in North America?
Well, if completed, it would be the largest open-pit mine in North America. It would be one of the largest in the world, and it would be located at the headwaters of the most productive salmon streams on Earth, on this planet. And it would, among other things, entail four separate dams. The largest of those dams would be the largest dam on the planet. It would be larger than the Three Gorges Dam in China. It would construct over 100 miles of road through what is now pristine wilderness. And here's part of the problem. The most prolific salmon runs for commercial purposes on Earth are in the headwaters region of this mine, Bristol Bay. And those salmon supply the greatest concentration of brown bear on Earth, which is certainly logical. So it would not only be a tragedy for the wilderness in general, for the salmon and the production of salmon here in Alaska, but the terrestrial wildlife, the migratory wildlife, the bears, the wolves, the marten, the lynx, all the wildlife in that region of the state, which is our most wildlife-intense region, there's more wildlife there than the other part of Alaska, would be imperiled, threatened, and should there be any crack in the dam where in this area that is of a high likelihood of getting significant earthquakes, then not only would the streams be polluted for hundreds of years, but of course this would wash into the ocean and virtually destroy our salmon populations.
Yeah, and what about the polar bear population and the beluga whales? I read a report on your website which talked about that they're in danger at this time. How long before those two species end up extinct if we continue on the pathway that we're now on?
Let's take the polar bears first. Already we have a 25% reduction in weights of polar bear cubs. We have smaller skull sizes for adult polar bears. Basically, the polar bears are already in trouble up here. We don't have census figures to indicate if the numbers are specifically down, but what we do know is the pack ice is as far as 300 miles offshore, which is where the bears have to go to find their ring seal prey. And, of course, that's too far for them to swim round trip, and they're drowning in the ocean. For the first time in history, they're finding polar bears drown out there in the ocean. And so we've got a very grave situation. Every time there's new computer modeling, it looks like the end for Alaska polar bears will be even sooner than the model before. Right now, it's looking like around 42 years is what they have left up here, unless we can change our ways and at least have some minimal impact on global warming and the thinning of the polar ice cap, which recedes further every year. Used to be that that ice shelf was only 30 yards off the northern coast of Alaska, or excuse me, 30 miles, and now it's out to as far as 300. So you can see what the fundamental problem there is. We've got to put pressure on our federal government, the U.S. federal government, to list the polar bear as endangered, and that's coming up quite soon. That's one of the things, is to contact legislators that Canadians may know here and let them know that you support listing of that polar bear as an endangered species.
And what about the beluga whale?
The beluga whales, the problem with the belugas is an isolated population that exists in Cook Inlet. That is the southernmost population of belugas. It is just south of our city of Anchorage. There is a area called Turnagain Arm that is the north end of Cook Inlet. Between Turnagain and Cook Inlet, that's the region that these belugas inhabit. They do not interface with any other beluga populations. It's an isolated population. Their numbers have gone from about 1,300 a little over a decade ago to fewer than 300 now. And it's, again, not looking good. I believe they are still diminishing, although at a far less rate than they were. Hunting of the belugas has been stopped, but now it looks as though pollution is the prime problem they're facing, and we've got to bring the pressure to bear to minimize pollution and oil exploration, that kind of thing, in the Cook Inlet region. Again, we just need to put pressure on the federal government in this case. I'm hoping your situation in Canada is somewhat better than we're facing here in Alaska.
Well, we're having problems with in Canada. We're having problems with the cougar population and even the bear population in areas. We're running out of time right now, and thank you very much for coming on, John. Is there any final words that you wish to leave with the listening audience?
Yes, it's just that Alaska is the last chance our nation, the U.S., has to preserve great tracts of wilderness, great wilderness areas, and we are in the process of losing that battle, and I would certainly hope that our Canadian friends would help us with this fight to keep the wildlife and wild places intact up here in Alaska.
Well, thank you very much, John. And if there is anyone listening in the listening audience, I just ask you go to John's website, the Alaskan Wildlife Alliance, and check it out. And he really does need help. His organization needs help. The wildlife up in Alaska needs help. And the Canadians out there that says, well, how does this affect me? Alaska is just above British Columbia. And anything that happens in Alaska, sooner or later, will trickle down to British Columbia. We will feel the effects because of the salmon stocks that run through there, that head up into, in British Columbia. We have to protect our brothers and sisters to the north, and we have to join with them in their fight. Well, thank you very much, John. We're going to continue on.
Thank you. My pleasure being on.
Thank you. This is Co-op Radio 102.7 CFRO. We're going to continue on with Wake Up with Co-op. We're going to continue on with Brad.
Hey, how you doing?
You're going to tell us a little bit about your blog, Brad?
Yeah. I forgot to mention earlier with Charles that for anyone that's interested, I've started a blog on Brad McCall, BradMccall. blogspot.com, and I cover a wide arrangement of different topics and different circumstances that are happening throughout the world. And for anyone that's interested, my email address is on there and ways to contact me. And it would be great if you want to go check it out, just do so. That's bradmccall.blogspot.com.
Well, thank you, Brad. And I have one quick announcement to make. The program comes to you with the support of Co-op Radio members, our members, and also the members of the chapter Music, and contribute generously to the success of Co-op Radio since 1981. The Yazzie Quartet is a string quartet replacing the advertised Copeman Quartet, who are unavailable to appear. This coming Tuesday, the Yazzie Quartet comes from France and is a renowned international group. At the press time, their program was not available. But to hear them, go to the Playhouse Theater located beside the QE Theater at Hamilton and Dunsmuir at 8 o'clock on Tuesday, November 20th. Student tickets are usually available. For further information concerning this and other concerts in this season's series, please call 604-437-5747. And Brad, we were talking before the show, you're from Alabama.
Yeah, that's right.
Can you quickly tell us, you're mentioning that there was foreign species were introduced to Alabama. We're kind of running out of time, so can you quickly sum that up to the listening audience?
Well, Alabama's kind of like a proving ground, or it was, I know, when I was much younger, where they introduced a lot of wild species into our environment there that weren't natural. And now that's starting to cause problems in the ecosystem there, especially with the plant life. Kudzu is one plant used for it's used to stop erosion, and it's basically taking over entire forests and killing all the natural old growth forest. And then you have natural old growth forest being just torn down by the acre for the profit of the paper companies. For mead, mead is one, for example, that's just tearing down old growth forest throughout the Alabama countryside.
Isn't there any forest reportation programs down in Alabama?
Yeah, they're planting pine trees. You know, plot pines is what we call them, and it's just rows and rows of planted pines. But that just doesn't seem to replace, in my mind, the old growth forests that were natural to that area, and it's very rare. I mean, I think the last old-growth forest that was a large in acreage was torn down in 2005, and it was ridiculous. So.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that, Brad. Today's show was brought to you by producer of Charles Boylan, Donna Peterson, myself, Reg Argue, and we had a special co-host this morning, Brad McCall, and this is Co-op Radio 102.7 CFRO, Wake Up with Co-op. I just ask everyone listening out there, please go to Alaskan Wildlife Alliance website. We were interviewing John Toppenberg this morning, the director, and he really needs your help. And I really ask if people have contact to other wildlife groups here in Vancouver and throughout the world, please contact them to contact John. He really needs your help. Thank you very much and have a great day.
Tune in to Co-op Radio 102.7 FM to hear Vancouver's only cooperative morning public affairs show, Wake Up with Co-op. We bring you special, in-depth coverage of local, national, and international affairs, featuring regular interviews with journalists from around the world, as well as special local arts and culture coverage and event information. Wake Up with Co-op brings you in touch with the world. Start your morning off informed. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 7 to 9 a.m. on 102.7 FM, or visit us online at www.wakeupwithcoop.com.